Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is a comedian and writer who won LGBTQ New Comedian of the Year in 2019. They were also a finalist in So You Think You're Funny 2019, and so many other competitions in the previous few years, it's got me wondering, did you know what was coming for us in 2020? To find out, please welcome Charlie George.
Oh, I love that intro so much. I did not know. I did not foresee the future, but you would think so from how hard I hit it before it happened. And I'm glad that I did. What a relief, because props to all the people who have done competitions on Zoom. I would not want to be in that position. So, yeah. But thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Was that your experience of the pandemic then, just sitting there with your awards being like, well, I've got these are my friends.
These are my friends now. This is a thing. Yeah. And then also like doing some online gigs, a lot of which I did one gig that was hacked by a bunch of teenage incels, which was hilarious. A lot of people, Zoom rooms got hacked in the early days before we learned all the top security of that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was an experience indeed, transitioning to online gigging during the pandemic and stuff. But I'm very lucky that I got to have some fun Edinburghs before all of this happened.
I'm actually just back from Edinburgh, and it was a very strange experience this time around.
Oh, was it weird?
Yeah, it was really strange, and it sort of felt like they were building it as the month went on, like more venues were popping up, more shows were being added, and now it's done.
Did it feel like the Fringe?
It felt like the first few days of the Fringe. It felt like the preview shows, and there were a lot of people doing work in progress. It was a lot of fun. I brought a friend with me and I did a lot of apologising. Like, you know, there's normally like posters all along this street and he doesn't care. He doesn't know.
You're like, normally there's some comedians crying over here because of how hard it's going.
Yeah, hardly anyone's like thrust leaflets into your hand. You're not getting the full experience. And he's like, I think this is nice. I like this. So I was like... Oh.
It sounds like it was a good one, like more sort of serene and chilled. That sounds like a nice Edinburgh.
Yeah, I think a lot of shows were selling out, but they were selling out like on the day or the day before. I think it was a lot of locals just being like, what can we go see? So yeah, good stuff. And to circle around to dating then, you have a story for us? You look afraid of your own story. Oh dear.
Well, no, I do have a story for you. Because I was thinking about different stories that I had, and I had one about a terrible date that involves food. But I thought I'm going to go for this one because it's probably one of my most... You said like... weird or confusing dates, and I've got to be honest, I've not really dated before the pandemic, like in a formal way, you know, where you sit down and like you like have drinks with someone. That is not how I've met anyone ever in my life or how I've started relationships, which probably explains a lot about me. But normally what I do is like I've met people through friends or through work and stuff like that, and this was a date to remember when I was a circus performer and spending a lot of time at festivals. And we were at, I think it was Glastonbury. Yeah, it was a mad Glastonbury festival. And we were all kind of in the circus field doing stuff. And there was this stunning new, she's like quite a new circus performer. Super, super amazing. Everyone was talking about her. She hadn't been going long, but was incredible at aerial rope, which was something that I used to do. Absolute stunning goddess of a woman. And everybody was like, oh, Charlie, you know, you should, you know, talk to her afterwards, see what happens. And we had like a bit of a flirty moment, and we decided to have like a date whilst we were at the festival. Now, I don't know if people have been to festivals or not, but like it's not the best place for like chatting and stuff. There's like a lot of loud music, like sitting by burger vans trying to hang out. But we kind of had a flirty moment and like lots of talking and chatting and stuff, and then we decided we were going to go out that night and party. And we all went to go and see, I think we saw Metallica. And it was also the year that Dolly Parton was playing, which was amazing. And we were like having drinks, having this great time. And she took MDMA for the first time. And this is a very dangerous situation because in my eyes, I was, you know, young, queer, fantasist, thinking, oh my God, I'm falling for the circus performer. And it felt like she was falling for me too. But it could have just been the MDMA when she kept touching my hair and being like, you're so amazing. We had this nuts time all kind of partying together and things got a bit raunchy. We went back to my tent. We were having this great time. And then when I woke up in the morning, she was gone. I woke up and she had disappeared from my tent. And it was like a Cinderella story, except if instead of like a slipper left behind, it's just like some underwear, like just some fancy green underwear. And I was like, I have to find this magic circus girl. We have to find her. And so I went on this kind of mission with my friends to try and like track her down from these emerald pants and bra set that were left in my tent. And I did find her again, but I also found her big, terrifying boyfriend, who actually I discovered quite quickly is her fiance. And so this was a summer where I was continually the girl that you... I was like a bisexual gateway drug, I think, or a pansexual gateway drug for people trying things out ahead of stuff. But yeah, it turned out she was engaged to be married, and we'd had this like beautiful all day hanging out, partying moment, magic moments whilst high, having sex together. And then I tracked her down, found her, and discovered that she's actually engaged to be married. And it wasn't going to be this big romance that I planned. So it's a bit sad, but it is also kind of something that I wanted to talk about, because I think it was a weird time when there was lots of people sort of experimenting and trying, and I often felt like I was falling into this pattern of being the girl that you kind of feel like it's okay to just try stuff out with and then see before you, you know, move on and have babies, which was something that happened to me a lot that summer. A lot of girls I was with now married with babies.
Oh, so you're not even just a drug by that description. You're like a gateway drug to the person they go on to stay with.
Yeah, maybe. Or it's like, I don't know if it was like the last hurrah of like, I've always wanted to try this, because that was stuff that I heard about afterwards. It's like, oh, I always wanted to try being with a woman. And it was like, I was kind of the person that it would be okay to do that with. I don't know if I was giving off that vibe. I don't know that I was giving off a serious committed vibe by dating people mainly at festivals or not going on serious dates where you sit down and do like an interview type thing, which... I don't really understand dating. I've dated for the first time in the pandemic and gone on apps for the very first time, because before that, all my serious relationships have been like, yeah, other performers. I dated a stand-up, I dated a dancer. My first ever girlfriend was a circus performer. So we met through work and then ended up going out. So I've had some success stories too, as well as this kind of succession of people sort of experimenting and then realizing that, you know, it's just a thing they wanted to try. You know, they just want to try it on for size. But it has been kind of nuts in the pandemic where all of that stuff went away and my friends were laughing at me. They were like, Charlie, how have you made it to your age and not gone on a date and not put yourself out there and actually done it like this? And I was like, yeah, you're right. What should I do? And my friend was like, you have to go on Hinge. Like, it's the tamest one. I think you'll be able to cope with it. And so she helped me set up a Hinge profile when I became single in 2020. And that was the first time that I've ever gone on dates where you sit down. And I have to say, it was like proper, like, need a training wheels. Like, I had no idea how dating works. Like, I was such a novice, such a loser. I was like, because I feel like people are way more relaxed when you see them with their friends or in a space where you're somewhere else. You can kind of get a sense of what a person's like through the things around them. But on a date, it really did feel like an interview, like you're polishing up your best bits and talking about this kind of stuff. And I just wasn't really sure how to drip feed stuff about me without seeming too intense, or like what was the right kind of like moves and stuff. So I've learned a lot about dating from this time, to be honest. It's my first, you know, I feel like reborn, because I didn't date much when I was younger because I was raised really religious and, you know, you weren't supposed to be queer and you weren't supposed to date. My sister used to have chaperone dates in a car with the lights on with my mother watching, because she had to date a Jehovah's Witness boy. So
wait, okay, hold on, let's pause on that.
We're getting in there.
Break down what that means. So they meet up in a car, or do two cars pull up next to each other? What's the situation?
I just remember finding it hilarious because I'm the younger sibling, right? And so I always used to tease my sister when she started dating. Terrible, terrible sibling. But I was just like, oh, you know, because my mum would set her up on these kind of dates, because you had to date someone within the religion, which is why I didn't do a lot of dating when I was younger. And yeah, and you had to be chaperoned. And no, it would be a car sometimes with the car doors open, parked on the street, lights on, mum looking out the window, the two of them chatting with maybe like a flask of soup or tea or something.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you were just placed on some random bench and then she watched from the car ready to run whichever one over.
Oh, no, she was in the house. They were allowed in the car together. You could sit next to each other in the car, but the engine had to be running, the lights on. It's very weird when you think about it.
It's beautifully orchestrated. It's actually slightly... less ridiculous than I initially thought when you said the car date. I was like, are you in the front two seats? And then she's got like a stick in it, like to bat away if either you get too close.
I liked your idea of like the drive-through date, where like you literally just sort of like you're in separate cars, the window winds down, you're just like, how's it going in there? What are you listening to on your radio? You just kind of like leaning yeah. over.
Your mum decides that's enough, she just drives off.
She just drives off. If the conversation gets a bit too saucy, it's like, accelerate. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
So you can see how I got a weird sense of dating from the beginning. So for me, it was very much like I joke about a lot when I talk about it on stage of like, I never really knew how to do it. And what I would tend to do was befriend someone for a long period of time. And then maybe we're just at a house party after about 6 months, a year of knowing each other. I'll lean over the punch bowl and just be like, shall we do this? No worries if not. And then we either move in together or we never talk about it again. I was kind of like at that point of starting relationships. I didn't know that, you know, some people do these things called dates where you just kind of keep meeting up over time and do it like that.
I kind of like the confidence of that, though. I think you need some points right there, because here's the thing. So I've often been someone that thinks it seems more organic to start dating someone you already have an existing friendship with. I think the stakes make a lot more sense. So you have an established dynamic, you already know, you get on, have shared interests, enjoy each other's company, whatever else. And then you can sort of go from there, as opposed to the really pressurized experience of, oh, this stranger I've met on an app, or that a friend has introduced me to, or whatever, I've got to decide if I could see myself living with them and having kids with them, and all these kind of like really lofty expectations that can be put on us from a young age. So I kind of like that. And I think there's a confidence about that, because talking to a lot of friends recently, I've been reminded by just how often people try and get you into a relationship without asking you. So they just start talking about like when you have kids one day, or moving in together, or introducing you to the family and all this kind of stuff, without actually like stepping up and asking the question of will you go out with me. And so you're almost like the opposite end of confidence in a way, of like, you're just going to lean over and be like, so we're friends and this breaks the rules, but let's go upstairs.
Yeah, I think you're being very generous with me. I like it. I've been trying to, because I've always felt like I've been doing it wrong. So it's kind of nice to hear in that sense that there's something about that. And I have heard recently, this is quite interesting, that people, apparently some people, I'm not aware of the phenomenon, but are taking friends on dates, or they're having their first date. I definitely did dates. And I think because the pandemic was kind of good for this, because of the, I mean, I don't know if it was good for that, but like, the restrictions meant that you had to slow down. So sometimes you would meet someone for coffee, or you'd go for a walk instead of like meeting over alcohol, where you're so right. Like, it's hard enough to negotiate things, but let alone having all that kind of stuff that clouds your judgment or perspective of it. If you're like, oh, am I having a nice time, or am I just out again having lots of gin and suddenly you seem amazing? And also, you're not going to say... It's not that you're not going to say the truth, but like on a date when it's so formalized and interview structure, of course you're just going to edit yourself and say the highlights of stuff. Whereas in a more relaxed setting, you get a chance for some real stuff to come out. And I think that's the thing that can be quite nice about seeing someone in other settings. But apparently some people have been taking friends on dates, or saying, let's meet together with friends as a first date. Apparently this is a thing that's happening. And I really like the idea, and I think actually it should happen more, and it might be something that I would consider trying in the future if I was in that situation again, because I think there's something about that, of seeing how someone is around other people, that you're, it's more authentic, isn't it? Like when someone's with other people, you get a sense of how they interact with others, like what are they like, do they feel comfortable, do they crack jokes, like are they nice to people, all of that kind of stuff. Because anyone can sort of on their own kind of corner you and present themselves as someone who's like, yeah, I'm really great and I'm totally well adjusted and I've been really good at having kids and all of this stuff, like start sort of and I volunteered once and, you know, it did this thing and that's
yeah,
it.
Because you're so not going to say, of need their friend next to them like calling them out and telling you the real story.
Yeah the real stuff of like, what are they actually like. I remember someone saying something really funny once, of just kind of, but you can't ask this on a date, and this is where it gets too intense, but it's just like, you know, like, how do you call your mum? And do you have any savings? And she was like, those were her two criteria. And I was just like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool actually. I do think looking at how they treat the serving staff is good. That's an indicator.
Oh, absolutely. That is a real fast way to stop me being interested in you.
Yeah. Do you make eye contact? Do you treat them like, you know, an equal? Or are you just kind of like weird, snappy fingery? Like that's always a massive turn off, isn't it? So yeah, like trying to get a sense of people in a condensed way. I have felt in general in the pandemic, there has been a condensed vibe to dating. Like, I think the uptake in dogs in the pandemic was exclusively, like, in my eyes, queer women with therapy dogs. I dated a lot of those. I discovered, you know, bigger the trauma, the smaller the dog. That was something that was something I learned, because there was a time I was going on dates and like people just kept rocking up with these tiny little dogs that were like shivering in little jackets. And I was like, oh, this is a thing.
That's a metaphor. Yeah, that shivery dog.
That shivery dog that you brought with you that's under your arm. But I think, you know, I've got a lot of compassion since going through this experience, because I'm like, actually, I think people have had a hard time and they've all just been doing their best to put themselves on the line and try and make a connection again. And I think sometimes dates have felt a bit awkward during this time because we've kind of forgotten how to connect, been spending a lot of time connecting digitally and perhaps removed from all of our networks that make us feel the most like ourselves and when we're feeling ourselves and when we're at our best. So you feel quite vulnerable and exposed, I think, dating at a time when everything has been quite vulnerable.
Yeah. And what a time for you to get into online dating as well. So at least that's something. It will be better than this. Like, you are coming in at a bad time.
I hope so, because I've literally been talking to loads of my mates being like, I don't know how you do this. Like, people have told me about all of these other things of like this phenomenon of ghosting. And I'm so old fashioned, like, I just won't do that. I'll just chase that person until I get a response, because I'm very direct. And I do think that is a quality that I have that people find intimidating. But I will just be like, you know, you can just tell me if you're not into me and you don't want to do this. I don't do the like I'm like, we're grown-ups. It doesn't make sense to just not say something. So there's some of these kinds of things that were like kind of weird. But then my friend had an interesting perspective on ghosting, and he was like, he played devil's advocate with it, and he was like, well, actually, back in the day, if you didn't like someone on a date and you didn't want to see them again, you just wouldn't ring them. And so ghosting probably has always existed, but we've just got this fancy word for it now. But it's like, how do we reject people? And we still haven't really found a good way to do that. And I'm sure people did in the past, just, you know, never ring your house phone again, never go to that pub again where you used to do stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know what it says about me that I kind of really want the feedback. If you're going to reject me, give reasons. I'm not going to be offended. Just like, break it down for me. And I don't know, is that sadomasochistic or something? Am I...
Oh no, I think that's quite bold. You get points from me for that, to want the actual feedback. I mean, I like to think that I'm, yeah, I mean, I definitely am direct. I don't know that I'd want the full list of reasons. I think, you know, because I have a sense I'd already know what they'd be. I'd be like, she's a bit too much. But like, just saying that I didn't really feel it is fine, or I didn't really feel a spark, or maybe see each other as friends. That says enough, doesn't it? Because it is hard to tell someone that you don't fancy them or you don't want to be with them. But it wasn't so much rejection. I think I found people that were like not really over exes was a big one. Had like ended relationships during the pandemic and then were quite keen to get into something else. People that were lonely, didn't know what they want. There was a point where I stopped and I found it all a bit much. And I was like, I think the tagline for all dating apps should be exhausting, expensive and annoying, because dating is expensive, exhausting and annoying. And I didn't realize that, because it's like, yeah, you've got clothes, you've got the booze, you've got to go out somewhere, you've got to like make all this effort, and then you might arrive and be like, it's like a house viewing when you get there and you know you don't want to live there, but you're like, you've got to take me on this tour and I've got to pretend I'm into it.
I actually love that. That's such a good way of describing it. I think you're right. You've got me thinking that it's kind of like, people often say it's another job having the dating apps, and it kind of is, but the colleagues are like maybe hotter, but they're way more confusing.
Way more confusing. I think that we all just need to, like, we need a new mating ritual. That's what I think. Something that makes the terms and conditions like more defined, like some kind of, I want to go Attenborough on it. I want like people to just, I want there to be like an old fashioned ritual, like the birds of prey or something. Because they're very clear. It's very clear, isn't it? Like the lady waits and then the bird comes out, does a little dance, hops about on one leg, and she either likes it or doesn't. Or like some kind of mating call. Like, this is just a clear directive to it. Do you know what I mean? You're like, whereas like, it's just all of this kind of toing and froing and second guessing and not sure and game playing and stuff. It's very hard for me. I think that's why I've avoided it. Because for me, I'm very like, wear my heart on my sleeve. If anything, I have to just slow down and be a bit more cool. My friends are like, you didn't write her a poem again, did you? They're like, Like, don't send any letters. Like, don't do stuff like that. So yeah, I think all the rules can feel a bit confusing about what you want to do, but I have managed to, further down the line, I've met someone now, and I think you can find someone who's your type of weirdo. And I think this for me is the secret to dating, is like, find your type of weirdo, person who finds your weirdness endearing. And also, I did find someone eventually who was just like, I'm tired too, and I just want to be really authentic and be myself, and this is how I actually feel. And I know it kind of breaks the rules a bit to talk about, we didn't talk about exes, but we did talk about bad dates on our date, which was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because it felt like we were both in the same boat, and she told me loads of stuff about terrible dates that she'd had, and I had told her about terrible dates that I'd had, and it kind of just like totally broke the ice, and suddenly we were just in like a really real place.
I like that though, and that seems very authentic, and maybe that's the easier route, that rather than making the weirdness of dating make sense, which I think is a impossible battle that'll keep this show going for many seasons, instead... I think maybe the quicker route is, it, rather than that, you try and just find somebody that can like laugh at the absurdity with you and can connect to you on a real level.
Yeah, I think that was a quick one where you realise, like, you know, if you're able to address the weirdness head on, talk about a time that, like, I had a date in Bristol. That's probably one time I did go on a date where someone had asked me out. And again, I'd had this habit that at that time of just like, if someone asked me out, again, I thought it was so ballsy. I think I just gave them points. I didn't really consider, do I like you? I'd just be like, yeah, sure, I'll go out with you, because it takes real courage to do that. And I really respect like people going up to someone and just saying that, because I worry that like that might die out. And I think that's one of the coolest things. I hope with like clubbing coming back and some of the parties and festivals and things that are opening up again now, that people will feel more confident if they do really like someone to like go over and just say, I think you're great, you've got a nice smile, would you like to go for a drink? Because I don't want us to lose that, because I think it does take such a long time on the apps to get to the point where you can actually meet someone in person sometimes. That was the thing that I also failed on, because I would be very direct. I'd be like, do you want to meet for a drink? And people were like, oh no, you have to kind of message for a while on here. And I was like, but I'm already on WhatsApp and Instagram and Facebook. Are you sure? Like, I've got to also do this.
I think that's the thing though, where your directness, I can really relate to that, where I would be quite happy for somebody to come up to me and just ask me straight up, deliver a compliment, ask me for a drink. Got a pretty good chance of me saying yes to that. If nothing else, I might just be like, yeah, let's find out what your deal is, even if I'm not sure I am interested. So yeah, I respect the confidence. However, I think a lot of people that, if they're not as direct as we are, they would find that approach too direct. And so I think in reality,
you
have to sort of take it back a little bit and find a like organic way to strike up a conversation with a stranger. And that is difficult. And I think that is more difficult now, because it's like, you know, you stand at a bus stop, everyone's on their phone. You're interrupting people. There's not the same sort of like chattiness.
We're competing with all of these, different distractions. And I remember like in the first kind of phases of like easings and moments where restrictions were like loosening, you were like, well, people were still meeting in bubbles. And it's like, you can't go up to someone's bubble when like you're just trying to be COVID safe. Because it suddenly had like this additional layer. Not only is it like intense and all of these things you have to get through to go up to someone and pluck up the courage, you're also now worried like, oh, they're going to be terrified of me and I'm crossing an actual boundary of like a disease. So like, as some of that shifting, I do think that that might go. And you're right, it's not for everybody. There have been points where I have felt less confident, or I've just wanted to try different stuff. Have you ever done speed dating?
No, I would love to.
Because again, I felt like for me, like I'm quite like a very physical person, and like I'll just sort of know from someone's energy, or like sitting with them, like with the, you know, the house share analogy, you kind of get a feeling of like, can I see myself living here, or do I feel comfortable in this space with this person, or do I not? And like, so for me, that's really important. I kind of want to get to that space quicker before engaging in loads of other stuff and messaging, which I'm not as good at. So I did go to speed dating, and I found that like a really lovely environment, because even if it wouldn't work out, especially if you're less confident, it's like you leave having feeling that lovely energy from having put yourself out there, but also maybe just had some lovely chats with people and made friends. And there was a few really nice, like amazing chick who runs OK Queer Cupid, and they used to do like queer speed dating nights where there would be entertainment as well. it facilitates that more directness, but again, in like a safe sort of facilitated way. So rather than just approaching someone, it's like the whole night is set up for you to meet new people. And there's something that supports that happening, which I think, and you can, you're given stuff to do sometimes. And some of the ways that the queer speed dating events that I went to that were really fun is like, they obviously catered to people who date people of all different genders, people with different pronouns, which was lovely. So you knew that that was already going to be catered to. And sometimes they had entertainment, which meant that, you know, so the intensity being on YouTube talking the whole time wasn't there. You could also react to like someone doing comedy or performing or something like that, which meant that you had some other stuff to talk about. Because that's the thing about dating for me, is like meeting someone one-on-one, maybe after your day at work. There's a lot of pressure to just be talking about yourself, like you say, with a complete stranger that you've met online. Whereas like if there's other stuff happening and you're meeting at an event, it's like, oh, there's all these other things for you guys to riff off and interact with, which I think is really lovely.
Yeah, and I think it hopefully takes out some of the exhaustion of it, because I think much of that comes from like, particularly if you're messaging somebody and, you know, they are just a stranger at that point and they ask you like, oh, what kind of music are you into? Very common question. And then so often people like want to think of the most obscure band they can, you know, they're not going to say Taylor Swift. And so I think there's that additional layer that hopefully you lose because you're sat in front of them. You can't scroll through your phone and be like, let's find something strange to say. And so maybe that does take some of the pressure off. But then we seem like people that would be very well suited to that. So maybe, I don't know. Do you think it's perhaps a room full of very like confident, independent people that maybe are less inclined to settle down sometimes?
Ooh, that's an interesting one about the inclined to settle down. Because I think you go through different phases where you feel like that. Like I always thought I was kind of, oh, you know, like, I think there's different reasons why I've been more like open and reluctant to get into something monogamous at different stages of my life. And then at other points where I felt like, oh no, it's really great to do that. And I just want someone I can lie next to and watch nature documentaries with who gets all my weird little jokes. And like, for me, like the test, the beautiful things about, you know, intimacy and a long lasting relationship is you can make up your own language. Do you know what I mean? You have your own weird little things that are just between you. And like, that's really special. And that only comes with like time and commitment and investing in something with someone. So I have developed more of an appreciation for that over time. But I've also equally really enjoyed being more fluid and in relationships that have involved two partners or having something that's felt more free at points in my life, maybe where I was building other things and I just didn't have the focus or capacity for that. And I think sometimes we can expect so much from like one person, and that can feel like a lot of pressure on both sides. I think there's a really great Prince song about kind of being your mother and your brother and your sister too, and it's like, nah, I can't do that, that's a lot of things. Do you know what I mean? Of kind of like being emotional support and then also like having really wild sex and going on these cool interesting dates where you expand your mind, like that's a lot. And so I sort of almost at points as well have been very realistic about the fact that you can't get all of those things from one thing sometimes, and it might make sense just to have a sexual relationship with someone and then have friends that you hang out with and do the other stuff.
Yeah, more points there. I love that, because I think you're talking about something that's so often overlooked, which is the sort of emotional responsibility it can feel like. Being a person's person can take up quite a lot of your mind, even if you're not with them all the time. You know, you still consider them and your behaviours and consider them. How long has it been since I've talked to them? And how do I show that I care about them whilst you're away on the road, or have them still feel valued even if you're working a lot and your hours, I imagine, can really vary. And so I can see how potentially, whilst for people that haven't explored more open styles of relationships, that may seem like more responsibility if there are more people involved. I guess you could also see it as some of that care is also shared. Like if they're dating somebody else as well, then it's like, well, we're both looking out for them.
Definitely. I've always seen it like that. And yeah, it has felt shared. It's felt held in a different way. It's also getting different things from different person and understanding the limits of what you can get from one individual sometimes. And not everything aligning all together in one person always happens. There's times where sometimes, you know, like I dated a couple for a while and I was at a stage in my life where I'd come out of a serious relationship. I was trying to think about what I was doing with my career. things were quite intense in my life. I didn't have the most stable housing. And so it was kind of just beautiful to date two people and come into, you know, they were opening out their relationship after being together for many years. And it was wonderful to feel like a part of their relationship, but I wasn't as emotionally invested. I didn't come with all the history and the stuff that they had. It was just like, yeah, it was a different space for me, but it was still very loving and still very held, but I didn't have the same of intensity to it, which was kind of good for me for a while. And there's been points of my life where I felt like I've really needed that. But I do think as well, like, I'm not against monogamy in any way, because I do think if you do find your person, I think one of the things you can learn about, I think it was one of my favorite comedians, I'm struggling to remember his name, but he had a really great bit on his Instagram recently about talking to someone in the audience, and they were saying about like, oh, they do these quarterly check-ins in their relationship. And he was like freaking out about it, like, what? And he was like, yeah, we go through these little reviews and see how we're doing. And it was just so modern and cool. And it was also, and then he was like, oh, so you can be an individual and be in a relationship? He's like, I didn't know that. And then the girl was like, neither did I. And it was like so cool. So I think we are evolving our relationships now, I think, from a lot of things that we've been learning and waking up to with shifts that have been happening in the dynamics of modern relationships. Finding ways that they can work for us in our new lives, and not just expecting that this one person is going to be everything and complete you and some of the crazy narratives that we've had around that, but be like, how can I retain myself and keep nourishing myself and look after myself and see that I'm growing in my way, and then also connect with another person who's doing the same for themselves? And that just always feels sort of healthier. So I guess you can find ways now where it does feel like less of that pressure filled sort of narrative we have of like, oh, you meet someone and then you like kind of what you were describing earlier of like, you know, you question whether you're going to live together and have all this stuff. Because I, to be honest, like now I love and monogamy. I always have. And I love relationships, meaningful relationships. But I don't know that I would necessarily want to live with someone again. Like I would like to love someone, but maybe still, like, even if I'm married someone or made a big commitment to someone, I really love having my own space, like, so much. Like, I can see that. And there's more and more couples doing this now as well, where you retain your own place, because those nights that I have alone are like how I retain my creativity and how I get to snore and starfish and watch the TV that I like and, like, you know, go through the stuff that I need to go through for myself and then have myself when I'm with someone.
Yeah, for sure. And I talked about that last season with my co-host, actually, of how many more people would probably live in separate but nearby households if finances weren't a factor. And I think there's definitely something to that. And I think for me, for a long time, I thought my comfort being single was, you know, very much about like independence and about maybe not having the best history of relationships, and so not always being that sold on them. And I think that that's definitely part of it. But more recently, I'm realizing that an additional element is that a lot of the kind of most archetypal ideas of a relationship are things that I'm not entirely convinced I want, like living with somebody for the rest of your life, marriage. I can be quite cynical about, for me, for other people, sure. So I think when you take that out, and I also have a really wonderful array of friends around me, that what's left in between, that gap is actually quite narrow. And so there's not as much to be filled there. And so maybe a little bit like you, I'm in a point, a lot of stuff going on work-wise, and I'm moving to Dublin for a bit next month and stuff like that. And so I'm sort of like, something more open and casual in some senses, but long-term or, you know, consistent in other senses appeals to me. So maybe dating couples, I'm definitely open to. And I think, like you said, it would appeal to me being the third person and being quite comfortable being like, I'm the additional person to this relationship. I'm happy to like support you guys and join in your love and, you know, have great times together and all of that. But I'm not going to feel left out if I don't live with you and share some elements.
Yeah, because this was a couple that lived together as well. So like, yeah, and I didn't feel that I was, yeah, that primary partner. But I was in a phase of my life where being the primary partner, I think, consistently felt like a little bit too much for me. And also it's kind of like what capacity you're at to give. And I think that's something that's nice about being mindful of like, do you have the space to give to something like that? Are the expectations realistic? And they're shape-shifting all the time. I think that check-in thing was so revelatory for me, because I was like, oh, you can go through these different stages of a relationship where perhaps you want more closeness and intimacy, and then it might make more sense to not have. But you're so right about the money thing. I think I made so many mistakes in the past when with my kind of not dating and falling head over heels, because I'm such a romantic, with people through my friendship networks or through work, and then ending up living together purely because both of us were broke artists and we were like, yeah, sure, let's move on this boat. What's the worst that could happen? It's like we got one tiny space. Or sharing a rented room in a house with other friends, and then that being really challenging over time, because you're just never feeling that you get those moments unless the other person's out, which, you know, if you're both having busy lives coming and going, it can be hard to have or facilitate. You're never getting those moments to decompress and properly be alone. You suddenly take that rented room space into sharing, and all hell breaks loose. So I think that's put unnecessary pressure on a lot of my relationships, is that intensity of like, yeah, space being such a premium in London and forcing your relationship to move to a level that perhaps it's not, and then a level of closeness that you can't move away from at any point once you're in it, if you're living together, can be quite a lot. And I'm sure a lot of people felt that in the pandemic, sort of living with partners and stuff. I think it put a strain even on really healthy, quite solid relationships, because we still need time apart and we still need time to grow our own stuff, to like reflect and digest our experiences. So I do think, you know, maybe more sheds. I don't know what the solution to that is. Maybe we need to build little outhouses, little scream rooms, panic rooms for our relationships that we can go into and then come back in. I'm not sure, but I have thought about some like funny ways of like dating in the future that I think could be quite fun as well. Like I was talking on stage about, what was it, this of like trying to ask people how they dated or met people was really funny, because I wanted different ways of doing it than ever going back on apps, because I don't think I want to, but I'm not sure how we're going to do that in the future. And I was thinking, do I just have to build a Venus fly trap, or like stand with the curtains open like in a wrestling outfit from like one of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling and hope for the best, or like leave a trail of antidepressants to my garden and hope that people pick them up? Like I don't like, you know, there has to be alternative ways as we move forward to do things if we want to meet people in new ways. I'm not sure what that will be, because we're working from home more now, so you can't really meet someone at the office anymore.
I mean, it'd be very strange if you are meeting them at your home office. I'd have more questions.
Wouldn't that be hilarious if WB met, like our eyes met over Zoom, like I saw them in that corner square and I just knew the way that they were having technical difficulties.
They'd logged on to the wrong Zoom call and I thought, no, you're where you need to be. All right, on that note, we will start wrapping up with our rules of the game. So is there something you try and live by in relationships you would recommend?
I think I'm going to go back to my earlier point of like, well, this is kind of not so much in relationships, but I think in dating, observing how the person that you meet treats the people in their lives and treats them around them. Notice the red flags, if there are any red flags. Don't ignore them or second guess yourself.
Yes, and I would add to that, actually, you made me think about when people set each other up with like mutual friends. And does it, in fact, make a little bit more sense if the mutual friend between you is there, as opposed to being like, here's a picture of this person, you're meeting them at 6 p.m. at this place, good luck. Actually, is it more organic that that person comes along and then you have like a friendly chat and it's maybe less pressure? So, yeah, maybe not a rule, but a like suggestion, maybe.
Suggestion, yeah. And I would definitely advise, like, if there's a way you can embrace the awkward, and like own the awkward with the person. Like, so if you are feeling any weirdness on a date or even in your relationship, it's a good thing to do, is to just kind of own any kind of awkward moments. And I find that that can break the ice and help you reconnect again if you've disconnected.
Yeah, just really look them in the eye over your drink and say, you're so awkward, aren't you?
This is awkward, isn't it? Isn't it really awkward right now? Tell me about the other awkward moments in your life. But I bet if you did honestly tell them about your awkward moments in your life, you'd be laughing in no time.
Yeah, no, I love that. And the one that I've got is annoying me at the moment, because a lot of my friends are hearing this, straight female friends, off men that they're seeing. And it is variations of the line, you're not like other women. And that needs to go right in the bin because, first of all, not a compliment.
No, who's saying this? People are being told this?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to be the demon from Dating Future as you get into all of this stuff. No, that is a line that, a lot of people say. And, you know, my devil's advocate response to that is to nudge him and be like, God, tell him, oh, so you don't usually like women, do you? Or something like that. Just really like throw a curveball at them and see how they react.
Because that's great.
How do you respond to that? Because what they're saying is, I would assume these are the kind of guys that might call women crazy, for example. So they're saying you're not crazy like other people I've dated, or you're more caring than other people I've gone on dates with, or whatever. But what they're just saying is you're better than the other ones. You're not actually saying you're great, and they're shitting on other women at the same time. So
yeah, it's really bad form. It's like not specific enough to be nice. And then it's also, relating it to this other thing. I would bat it back even further and go as far as say, well, like, you're not like other men, because most men that I know would actually consider my feelings before they say something. You know what I mean? You could go as far as to be like, you're not like most other men, and then get into like what the other men are like and maybe make that good qualities.
Yeah, or even just say, oh, for sure, you're not like other men. And just say nothing else. Just stare them in the eye and see how insecure they get hearing it back.
Yeah, because I think this is a powerful tool. Someone told me this once when, like, in meetings with people that were quite difficult. And sometimes the skill is, like, saying the thing back to them and making them think about what they've just said is way more powerful than coming back with a response, because then they'll actually potentially have the opportunity to learn from it. If they don't, run. Just get out of there.
Because I think that's the thing, the additional caveat of this is if you see other warning signs that are in the same kind of vein, like, for example, all the exes they ever talk about, they frame as like crazy and, you know, desperate and these kind of words, then you're sort of like, do I want to be the next person that he's describing in this way? Probably not.
Oh, that's such a weird... people have said some crazy stuff to me on dates before, but never like, you're not like other women. I'd find that so weird.
It's very strange. So that can go in the bin. That's my rule of the game.
Yeah, get it in the bin. What are your thoughts on talking... The thing that I'd like to put in the bin, what are your thoughts on talking about exes on dates?
I think it's not a first date thing, but I am quite interested and I want to know fairly soon, because if nothing else, I think it's important to know, was their last relationship like a week ago or 7 years ago? Because they're very different things.
Yeah. Okay. So you're talking about like getting the information from like a sense of where they're at. Okay. That does make it quite positive. So it's not like a blanket rule, but I do think there maybe has to be something about putting it in the bin too early or too much. Because that was a big one that I had in the pandemic of someone sort of consistently. I felt like after a while I knew more about his ex-girlfriend than I knew about him. And then I was like, I feel like maybe you're not over
this. Yeah, I never want to be sat there feeling like I'm rehab for your last relationship. That's not my job.
yeah, definitely.
All right. For sure. Well, we will wrap up there. We'll be back in a minute with our Apple Podcast subscriber bit. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been so great chatting.
And yeah, thanks for having me.
And if people want to find you online, maybe see you at shows, where should they go?
Yes, so you can find me online on Twitter at CG Does Comedy and on Instagram and Facebook at Charlie George Comedy. And I'm part of a triple bill called Funny Femmes, which is going to be coming to the Battersea Arts Centre on the 29th of September. That's our next upcoming show. And we're also going to Women in Comedy Festival in Manchester on Friday the 1st of October, if you're up in Manchester.
Ooh, who are the other two?
It's Alex Petulis Fernandez and Charlene Jahan, and we all met on a Femmes of Colour comedy writing group.
Nice. Cool. All right, so we'll wrap up there. Thanks again.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.